This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in, White Sox Weekly. May the 4th be with you, as one of our producers, Jake Cantu, said when I came into the studio today on May 4th. White Sox baseball coming up a little later. First pitch after 1 o'clock. Sox and Cardinals. White Sox lost last night to the Cardinals. They were shut out. But some positive things to get to there, especially with the Brad Keller start. Connor has the day off, obviously. I am not Connor McKnight. I am Shane Orling, sitting in on White Sox Weekly. I'll be with you through pregame and postgame as well, as Connor has the day off today. And taking you all the way up to this White Sox-Cardinals game, but some news this morning from the Chicago White Sox, just a little bit of housekeeping. White Sox made a couple of roster moves, recalling infielder Brian Ramos from AA Birmingham and placing on the 10-day injured list Danny Mendick with lower back tightness. That's retroactive to May 2nd. So you'll be eligible to return in about a week. I know Pedro Grifol was a little skeptical on the severity of Danny Mendick and what he was dealing with. There were some reports earlier this morning. White Sox made this official in the last 10 minutes. Early this morning, there were some reports that they were going to be calling up Brian Ramos, nothing official, and there was obviously going to need to be a corresponding move if you're calling up the 22-year-old infielder. Somebody has to either go down or go to the injured list. The speculation was that it would be Danny Mendick. That wasn't the initial expectation when Danny Mendick had this injury, but now with the retroactive IL placement, that will place him on the 10-day injured list. Ramos, no major league experience, so he will eventually be making his major league debut for the White Sox. He's going to wear the number 44. In his career, he had 255, 342 on base percentage, and a 428 slugging with 67 doubles, 56 home runs. He's walked 160 times and scored 230 times in almost 400 games, four seasons spent in the White Sox minor league system. He's a native of La Habana, Cuba, and originally was signed by the White Sox as a free agent on July 2nd of 2018. So exciting, another young player. He has, in AA in Birmingham this year, struggled a little bit, not quite hitting 200. Obviously, the White Sox in need of some bodies at this point. The injury bug has bit them quite hard to start the season, and it's not a secret that it's been a struggle in starting this year out. So the White Sox just in need of bodies to come up, play some infield, get some at-bats. And Brian Ramos, it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to coming up from AA, that kind of fast-track call-up, no AAA experience, no major league experience. He's young. We'll see what he can do at the major league level. You know, a lot of guys get their opportunity and make the most of it. We can hope that that is the case with Brian Ramos. Last night, White Sox were shut out by the Cardinals, and I know that's become a common refrain, but there is a little good news. The run scoring has at least improved of late. It was the longest period of time that the White Sox went between shutouts this season. So a little bit of positivity for you if you're looking at the recent trends of higher run scoring for the Chicago White Sox. But last night, a shutout at the hands of St. Louis. It was Brad Keller on the mound for the Sox, and he was promoted about 6 days ago from AAA. Keller was a free agent signing a minor league contract back in March for the White Sox and got the call-up to the majors, his return to the majors. Keller, a longtime Kansas City Royal, spent six seasons there and now 28 years old, came up to the White Sox yesterday and put together a decent outing. I think if you could call it decent. A little inefficient. The pitch count got up there for only 4 2/3 innings pitched, and you would like to see Brad Keller be a little more efficient, but it was good to see him settle in a little bit. Obviously, you come up after the minor league deal. You're getting an opportunity back in the major leagues. That first inning could be a little rocky, could be a little shaky coming out in that kind of spot. But after that rocky first inning, he did settle down. And it was encouraging. He finished with 4 strikeouts, all of which came in his final 2 innings pitched. Again, 4 2/3 innings total. So in his final 2 innings pitched, put together 4 strikeouts. It felt like he was starting to get a little stronger with his sinker. And as he gets further away from an injury, I believe it was the thoracic outlet syndrome, as he gets further away from the injury and gets back into form, he's not like an excellent pitcher for his career, but he's been good. When you have a 4.27 career ERA, and nobody's going to call you a Cy Young winner, but it's not terrible. That's a serviceable major league pitcher you can find a spot for in the rotation. The sinker wasn't as effective last night as it had been in the past. And he was once, honestly, a really inducive ground ball pitcher. Induced a lot of double plays, close to leading the league in it. So you look for a guy last night who had a rocky outing to start, but settled in, settled down, locked in a little bit, and started to look a bit more like his old self. That could be something going forward for the Sox to keep an eye on. Because as we move forward this season, nobody thinks the White Sox really are going to turn this around and win the American League Central. But you can start to kind of rebuild your future. You can start to make moves that will help in 2025 and 2026. If some players like this can pan out or be serviceable enough that maybe another team gets interested. And we've seen some desperation already. It's early, but teams are starting to make some moves. I want to get into that a little bit later in the show. We do have a loaded show ahead of White Sox baseball. Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, will join us at 11 o'clock. Got some notes on the American League Central. That'll do that in the 11 o'clock hour as well. It's been a stronger division than expected. So we're looking forward to that. And Jim Callis, Jesse Rogers also joining us later in the show. Now, White Sox Cardinals today. There's a reason to be excited about the White Sox today because Eric Fetty is on the hill and he's been stellar. Stellar this season for the Sox. Fetty, right now, with an excellent ERA, going out and taking care of business, coming off of a season where he was a Korean Baseball League player, MVP, did well in the KBO, but coming back into the majors and right now entering this start with a 2.6 ERA. All of his starts have been quality, save one against the Guardians when the Guardians were scorching hot to start the season. Tagged him for 5 runs on 4 hits in 5 innings. Other than that, he has not allowed more than 2 runs. No more than 2 earned. 1 run against the Royals, a shutout against the Royals in 5 2/3. And his last time out against Tampa Bay, a part of that sweep the White Sox had of the Rays, 8 1/3, 7 hits, 2 runs, 9 strikeouts. The strikeout has been a bit of a weapon for Fetty in his last 2 starts in particular. 20 strikeouts in his last 2 starts. So that has been excellent to see as well. And this goes back to the White Sox having the ability to make the most of acquisitions this past offseason and turning them into something they can use going forward and help them with their future. And when you look at how Eric Fetty profiles this season, it doesn't look like kind one of those mirage-y kind of starts to a year where a guy's getting a lot of luck. All of his peripheral stuff, the StatCast, which I love, the analytics side of this, the advanced stuff, Major League Baseball has done a great job of making a lot of this information public and giving it to the fans, having the ability to go and look at, okay, what are some of the deeper things that are happening that are allowing a player to be at the level that they are at. For Eric Fetty, it all looks good. The whiff rate up for his career. Strikeout rate way up, 76th percentile in all of Major League Baseball. His ERA obviously is fantastic, but the expected number is also really good at 3.2. So everything's kind of working out in the way that it should if you're Eric Fetty. The expected stuff matches the results is the point I'm trying to make, which means to me, once you're 5-6 starts into a season and we're through the month of April and now we're entering May and we have a clearer picture of who and what teams and players are going to be in 2024, that starts to say this is sustainable for Eric Fetty for the rest of this season. And now, will Eric Fetty be with the White Sox for the entire season? Nobody has the answer to that question. We know come July, it's likely there will be some pieces moved. But again, that can become an advantage for the Sox and for their future. Another interesting storyline today. Lance Lynn will be on the hill for the St. Louis Cardinals. It'll be his first time pitching against the White Sox since he was here in Chicago. And Lance Lynn, at the end of last year with the Los Angeles Dodgers, kind of a hit-or-miss affair in L.A. He pitched well towards the end of the regular season, got shelled in a playoff game that the Dodgers wound up losing. But so far this season, it's been good. Enters today with a 2.64 ERA. The pitching matchup, Fetty and Lance Lynn, is two guys who are off to a really nice start. Lynn opened his season against the Dodgers, his former ball club, from the end of last season. 4 innings, 4 hits, no runs, 5 strikeouts. It was a rough start after that against the Marlins, where he got tagged a little bit through 4 2/3. But since then, lights out for Lance Lynn. 5 innings against the Phillies, no runs. 1 run allowed and 7 against the A's. Only 3 runs allowed and 5 against the Diamondbacks. And then a 1-run affair his last time out against the Mets to bring that ERA to 2.64. Now, Lance Lynn last season with the White Sox did struggle, so it'll be interesting to see in a little bit of a revenge spot for Lance back in his familiar confines in St. Louis, facing off against his old team. But I mentioned that public info that MLB has put out and how those peripherals track, and if you can think of something is sustainable for a player. I don't want to be mean to Lance Lynn, but you go and you look at some of the expected stuff and some of the advanced stuff at StatCast, and it isn't good. This is where, if you're asking me, who's the more sustainable guy? Two guys who have an MLB history and have struggled in the past but are off to bounce back starts, it's Fetty. The guy on the hill for the White Sox today, I think, is a safer bet than Lance Lynn this season, frankly, despite Lance Lynn's good raw numbers. You look at the expected ERA, 4.5. That just tells you that's a guy that's getting lucky. His fastball has been excellent, one of the best fastballs in all of baseball. But that's kind of been the story on Lance for a long time. He's a fastball pitcher, and when it works, he'll be effective. When it doesn't, some of the off-speed stuff can really get him hurt, and that's kind of been the story this year. The fastball so far has been effective, but the velocity has been down a little bit. It's not the speedy, high velo fastball that it used to be. The exit velocity, which is good to know just how much hitters are tagging you, doesn't look great. What I'm saying is the White Sox have an opportunity today with Lance Lynn on the mound. And when you look at the ERA and the raw numbers, you might not think that right away. You might not think that with Lance Lynn out there, the White Sox are going to have an opportunity to get some hits. But for a lineup that's been struggling, you're going to get a guy who throws a lot of fastballs, who doesn't throw them especially hard. It's an opportunity for some of the young players on this team to get in the box and get some hits. And the offense can go to work against Lance Lynn today. And I genuinely believe that the barrel rate for Lance Lynn, I know it's, I'm geeking out at this point, but that is a statistic. It tells you how often players are getting the sweet spot of the bat on the baseball off of pitches thrown from that person. And for Lance, he ranks in the 7th percentile in all of Major League Baseball. 13% of his pitches are getting barreled. Tells you you can hit him. Now, the results have been favorable so far, but we can hope that that changes today. On the other side, as White Sox Weekly continues, we will talk to Michael Huff. But before we do that, get ready to rumble. Join us at the ballpark on Thursday, May 9th, for WWE Night as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40 p.m. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. White Sox Director of Youth Baseball, Michael Huff, joins White Sox Weekly next. Michael Huff, Director of Youth Baseball for the Chicago White Sox, puts on wonderful summer camps, has a lot of good information on prospects, the pitching staff for the White Sox. Looking forward to talking with him as we effort to connect with Michael Huff. But right now, I just want to take the opportunity to talk about something that I think has been a little bit of a surprise in Major League Baseball this year. And I think if you had asked anyone before the season started if this would be the case, people may have laughed in your face. If you take a look at the American League Central standings, and I'm not sure how many Sox fans out there have, given the way this season has started and the kind of known nature of that situation. Four of the five teams in the American League Central billed as likely the worst division in the American League, if not in all of baseball, going into the season. Four of the five teams are over 500. And not just over 500, but multiple games over 500. And all four of them have positive run differentials. This division, out of nowhere, could you sneaky make an argument that it is the best division in the American League? The Cleveland Guardians, I don't know how real they are. Their offense certainly wasn't supposed to be this good, and it has slowed down as of late. 4-6 in their last 10 games after a ridiculous 17-6 start for the Guardians. Now 20-12. It's been a little bit of a rough patch. But the start to the season was spectacular. The Kansas City Royals sitting at 20-13 with a plus 56 run differential. If you're into the minor league stuff and the prospects, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. in Kansas City got paid before the season started. The Twins 18-13 and the Tigers 18-14, all four of those teams with positive run differentials. It's just been a surprise to see the Central be this good. I have a little bit more I want to get into a little later in the show, just breaking it down and looking at who's actually going to survive. If this really is a dogfight into the later days of summer, who's going to be the team in this division that comes out on top? But right now, joining us, Michael Huff, the Director of Youth Baseball for the White Sox. Michael, how are you?
I am great. How are you doing today?
Doing well, man. Excited to talk about these summer camps. It just seems like such a great opportunity. I remember being a kid when I was playing youth baseball, and my dad would take me to this like warehouse, and it was a couple former professional baseball players, pitcher and first baseman. And we'd hang out, and they'd give us pointers, and we'd, you know, go for an hour and hit. One of the most rewarding things I had the opportunity to do as a kid. It's just so cool feeling like you're a part of the major league organization.
Yeah, I tell you, Shay, it's pretty neat that the White Sox have chosen to create an entire youth baseball department that has three former major leaguers, myself, teammate Dan Pasqua, Jim Adusi, who oversees our travel program and was really the person that started the summer camps. And all of the instruction that we do has come from the White Sox coaches. Now, obviously, we've kind of simplified it. as those White Sox coaches talk, they work a lot neck up because these guys are freaks that are in the major leagues.
Right.
We work a lot neck down with these kids. So for the 4 days of summer camps, and we're going to be in over 50 camps this summer from the very northwest corners of Elgin and Schaumburg all the way to northwest Indiana, it's neat that those first couple days we really start to break down throwing, fielding, hitting, using buzzwords and phrases that will resonate with the kids. There is homework, so parents, trust us, we are going to have these kids doing some homework. But part of that homework is trying to teach the parents what the kids have learned, picking favorite players, favorite numbers, stuff like that, and coming back, drawing pictures. But then days 3 and 4, there's a lot more games, as well as some instruction. And Thursday, the last day, is usually we have a little bit of a baseball Olympics followed by a bunch of games. So it's a neat experience for the kids. You know, $165. You're getting tickets to a game. You're getting a hat, T-shirt, whole bunch of swag. But we really try to educate and build a foundation, boys or girls, with just gripping a baseball, throwing, swinging a bat, and then incorporating it into games over the course of the week.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, I know kids hear the word homework, and they're like, oh, you're going to give me homework? I got to go do this summer camp. And how bad could baseball homework really be? It's not like they're sending them home to do math.
No, it's always, you know, draw a picture of something you learned today, either throwing or hitting. You know, write down the number of your favorite player and you know, what position he plays or she plays. So it's fun type homework, but we're trying to get the kids to understand that you really can become good at anything. It's in the classroom, it's with friends, church, synagogue, whatever it is. If you can kind of learn to do things in little increments multiple times a day, multiple days a week, and that's how you really kind of build that foundation for success, whether it's math, history, again, friends, or sports.
Well, I think that's a really important thing to ingrain, too, because think about even at the major league level, like the adult players who you mentioned are freaks. Everything's head up, right? But I think about so many guys, there's all these stories of guys go home from games and they have their hitting journals where they'll write down the shapes of the pitches that they saw and how they could have approached an at-bat differently. So they're doing homework also. For the kids now, like at their age, maybe they're thinking, oh, I really have to do this? But I think that's so valuable.
Right. And if you can build that foundation of, hey, new math subject on Monday, and if I just spend 10 or 15 minutes Monday night, 10 or 15 Tuesday, maybe 30 Wednesday or 15 Thursday, you're going to have a really good chance to do well on that math quiz. Likewise, you just learn something at practice on Monday. Well, let's play catch with our dad on Monday night. Tuesday, let's do it with mom. Wednesday, let's do it with our best friend. Thursday, let's go back with dad. And guess what? When you have that game on Friday, you're probably going to have a chance for a lot more success. So, but to your point, now, I mean, kids, there's so much technology and ways to look at things, look at themselves, throwing, hitting. It was interesting when I first came up in the major leagues with the Dodgers, pre-video technology or anything, there was this guy with the Dodgers named Oral Hershiser, who even then with VHSs was having his wife film him, was writing down what the other hitters were doing, what was the count when they got the home run, what, you know, how did he set up people? And that homework component, which is very prevalent today in both hitters and pitchers, was something that was just coming around late 80s, early mid-90s when I played.
I want to talk a little White Sox with you and some of the prospects in this system. And I think today, honest, we got to start with Brian Ramos, who got the call up this morning.
Yeah.
Danny Mendick to the 10-day IL. And you just take a look over his minor league career, about 1,500 at-bats. It's been 4 years. He's still young, 22 years old. Hits fairly well, 770 OPS, 255 average. This year, smaller sample size, has not been great. 88 at-bats and just hitting just 182, 572 OPS. So what are the White Sox getting when they call up Brian Ramos? I imagine it'll be a short stint to fill in for Mendick.
Well, yeah. It's interesting. You look at that stat line, if someone were just to go up and look at what he's done, and you kind of scratch your head. How is someone hitting below? Don't we have enough guys hitting below 200 right now? Don't we want someone a little better? He is, you know, in his last eight games, he's gotten a hit in every one of those eight games, and he's 11 for 33. So let's not go back and subtract 11-33 out of those 16 hits and 88 at-bats to see how he really started the year. But clearly, whatever it was those first few weeks is in the rearview mirror now. And over the last week, he's hitting over 300. And I think he's demonstrated to the coaches there as well as to Chris Getz and staff that this was the kid that last year in spring training, year before, that demonstrated an aptitude and a lot of ability. So I believe that's what they're looking at when they're calling up Brian. But for anyone, that first call to the major leagues is very surreal. I remember mine as well. having gone 0-4 games in Vancouver and not playing in the last one and not understanding why, begging the coach, hey, I can get a hit in Vancouver. It's not the Canadian thing. And at the end of the game, getting called up, or him telling me you're going to the major leagues, which is why you're not playing. And for Brian, I'm sure it's the same thing. He's like, well, heck, if it took me hitting below 200 to get called up to the majors, I would have done that a long time ago. I kept trying to hit over 300. You guys never called me up. So for him, it's got to be very exciting, and I am sure, you know, he'll get his feet wet very quickly. Pedro, I'm sure we'll get him out there, and I'm hoping, as all of the Sox fans are, you know, that he can relax, take in the moment, and just play the way he's been playing the last 7 days, last seven, eight games, and not worrying about the fact that he's in the major leagues.
Another 22-year-old in the system who's struggled as well at the AAA level, though, this season in Charlotte. Colson Montgomery, it hasn't been the kind of fast-track success that a lot of Sox fans were hoping for. There have been signals. The power has started to flash. He's got 4 home runs, 23 in his career. What can you tell us about Colson?
Back when we played, back in the dark ages, you spent an entire year at a certain level before you moved up.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's already in AAA at this young age speaks volumes to his abilities. Again, with the Dodgers, you hit 300 in A-ball. You were not getting called up midway through the season. You had to play an entire year. They wanted you to have 500 at-bats before you really started to get challenged at the higher levels in the minor league. So most guys were coming up in their mid-20s, and there was the occasional early 20, but most people were getting called up with the Dodger organization in their mid-20s. So I think people need to remember that he is still learning on the fly. In AAA these days, you have a lot of major leaguers that can think through situations, find flaws in swings or aggressiveness, and are smart enough to exploit those. So I think, to your point, yeah, the 4 home runs is starting to come around. The fact that he's hitting about 230, again, young. The thing that bothers me, and again, I think for most of the Sox coaches, is let's start to break this down almost month by month. 40 strikeouts in less than 30 games. Let's see how that translates to the next 30 games and then the 30 games after that. And I think everyone within the Sox organization is looking to see that growth, that maturity, not necessarily expecting this young phenom just to be able to hit over 300, have more walks and strikeouts at every level, because that type of thing just doesn't happen.
It's been a kind of a rough search for bright spots in the early goings this season. You've had to squint a bit, but one of them recently signed, Tommy Pham, has come onto this team and just
hit. Yes, the Pham-inator. It's been very fun. And he brings to the ball club an aura of, here's how you succeed. Here's how you have a positive outlook. And because of the shutouts, because of so many people with slow starts, and we're now starting to see everyone come back to, you know, that career average, the back of the baseball card, and all these averages now are finally getting over 200, and I'm sure we're going to see a bunch in the high twos within a relatively short period of time. But to have someone come in and have that type of, you know, aura about him, not that this is a Hall of Famer, but here is someone that has had tremendous success everywhere he's gone. And to be able to demonstrate, here's how I go about, here's how I know I'm going to have success late in the game, middle of the game, here's how I prepare, and to carry that through, even with some losses, I think everyone has been able to feed on him. And you're able to string a couple wins in a row. You're able to score runs, with the exception of last night. And every now and then, yeah, tip your cap when someone's pitching like that, like Sonny Gray did. But you now are seeing a Sox team that, you know, is scoring multiple runs, and which then means wins are going to follow.
Yeah, Michael Huff, Director of Youth Baseball for the White Sox, thank you for joining us. I'm sure you're looking forward to the summer camps.
Likewise. Hey, have a great rest of the show and a great day.
Thanks. You as well. When we come back on White Sox Weekly, I want to get back into that surprise of the MLB, that the American League Central might be the The AL East is not the AL Beast anymore. That might reside in the Midwest again. The American League Central off to a very strong start. And how will this whole thing shake out? Who is going to end up on top? We'll get into some of that next on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, Monday morning at 7, ESPN Chicago.
White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Connor McKnight has the day off. Shane Orling sitting in with you. Got White Sox and Cardinals coming up in a little bit right here on the network. And Harry Potter fans join us at the ballpark on Friday, May 10th for Harry Potter Night as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:40 p.m. Be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. You can get tickets at whitesox.com/promos. My wife is the biggest Harry Potter fan. I think I have to get some tickets and go to Harry Potter Night on the South Side. Looking forward to that. I was talking a little bit earlier before I spoke with Michael Huff, the White Sox director of youth baseball, about this American League Central. And if you haven't taken a peek at MLB standings, it might surprise you. Or maybe if you're waking up from a month-long coma and you only had the information given preseason that the AL Central was going to be essentially the baseball version of a trash bin, it might surprise you to learn that it's actually maybe the best division in the American League. Got Cleveland sitting at the top at 20-12 as one of the highest scoring offensive teams, which is a total shock. Nobody expected Cleveland offensively to be that great. Everybody knew the pitching was pretty good, but they have survived Shane Bieber being down for the season. They've also survived one of their better hitters, Bo Naylor. It's a cold start to the year. And frankly, not looking good in terms of the peripherals, the Statcast numbers for him. But guys like Stephen Kwan, guys like Jose Ramirez, guys like Josh Naylor have kept this offense afloat. And Cleveland has been among the very best teams in baseball to start the season. That's 17-6 start. Now sitting at 20-12, they have been fantastic to start this season. And they sit atop the American League Central with 20 wins, which is the second most in the American League. And Kansas City, also at 20 wins, 20-13, half a game out of the first place spot. I remember listening months ago before the season started, and I think Sylvie was talking on the flagship, I'm Waddle and Sylvie, about Kansas City and paying Bobby Witt Jr. and the decision to give a kid like that all of that money and extend him now and what it would mean for that organization and the feeling that they aren't even close to being ready to contend, when in reality it looks like Kansas City has arrived, maybe a year early. Nobody really expected them to be this elite division playoff level team, but here they are with a plus 56 run differential. The pitching and defense has been phenomenal. The offense has been scoring runs, second in run scoring in the division, just two runs behind Cleveland, as Kansas City has really started to heat up on the offensive side of things. And a 20-13 record, it speaks for itself. You've got Minnesota, who started the season in abhorrent shape. They were horrible for the first 2 weeks, but after a sweep of the White Sox, all they've done is rip off 11 consecutive wins to get to 18-13, a game and a half out of first place. Their run differential's positive at plus 18. And the Detroit Tigers, who many expected to take a step forward this season, but again, in a bad division where maybe 84, 85 wins could win it, they're at 18-14 with a positive run differential and a starting pitcher in Tarek Skubal at the front of their rotation, who, according to betting markets, is currently the favorite to win the American League Cy Young. So the point I'm making is this. This division that was expected to be horrendous and could be won with 84 to 85 wins, it might be a dogfight. It might be a four-team bloodbath to figure out who can come out on top of this between Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, and Detroit. And there is some excitement in the White Sox having the ability to play spoiler in some of these games. you're going to watch teams that are in desperate need of wins and a White Sox team that might have the opportunity to be a spoiler. That's a listen, maybe I'm crazy. Brendan Riley on the other side of the glass is laughing at me. But I find entertainment in that. I like ruining other people's dreams. I enjoy that. I get enjoy. I won't hide as a fan that I hate the Minnesota Twins. And if Minnesota's coming to town in need of a win and the Sox can spoil it for them, I'm going to take a little joy in that. But I think it's fun if you're trying to find something in this division to watch for this season outside of Chicago. It's a surprisingly really good division. Now, the Tigers are getting it done differently than most of these teams. The Tigers are all pitching and defense. They can't score. 128 runs scored, second worst in the division, and they are well behind the other teams in that regard. Been a lot of one-run wins, a lot of late-inning wins. The pitching rotation and obviously having Skubal is fantastic for them, but I have questions about the sustainability of it if the offense isn't going to get it together. The Twins were the expected favorite in this division. Now that they've gotten hot, ripping off 11 straight wins, things are looking a little better there, and maybe this plays out the way everybody thought it would before the season started. Minnesota just runs away with things. That could be the case. But Kansas City, I said preseason, I was talking with a friend, and people I thought were not disrespectful, but discounting of the Kansas City Royals. I felt like the move to pay Bobby Witt was a smart one. That's a great player. When you can get a great player, a prospect, get him up into the major leagues and have him be successful that early, locking him up early is a good call for a baseball team. And I thought the pieces that they were starting to put around him and the way they were starting to build their team, it felt like they were approaching becoming a threat in this division. Whether they're a threat in all of Major League Baseball remains to be seen, but they have the best run differential in the division right now, despite being in second place at plus 56, and their run scoring is ticked up enough that I think you can start to look at Kansas City and go, hey, maybe they're legit. And Cleveland, I thought, would take a step back after last season. I thought would struggle to repeat some of their magic. But that's an organization that, boy, it seems like one man's trash is another man's treasure with them. It just, every time you think that they've missed on a player or, you know, they do things so well in finding ways for a guy like Jose Ramirez to take a discount kind of deal, at least that's the perspective on it nationally, and stay with that organization. Their ability to routinely develop young pitching and young position players, guys like Stephen Kwan who come up through that organization and end up being high-quality bats, and you don't expect them to hit for power, and then they end up doing it. It's almost like some voodoo magic that the Cleveland Guardians organization has, where for the past half decade at least, all of their young talent seems to work in a way where it doesn't become necessarily elite, but it becomes good enough to build a team. I think my money, if you're looking at who's going to come out on top here, it would be the Minnesota Twins because of the preseason pedigree. Because we know what they are. I don't think Pablo Lopez is going to continue to struggle to the extent that he has at the start of this season. You see that a lot with some of these really good pitchers have rough Aprils and bounce back in May as the weather starts to warm up, as they find their stuff, as they get a little more consistent. Pablo Lopez right now an ERA approaching 5.483. He will start today for the Twins against the Red Sox. It has been rough going, except for one start against the Orioles and one against the Royals. He's given up run totals of 3.53 and 4 in the other four starts. 4.83 ERA for a guy who entered the season as one of the top three favorites to win the AL Cy Young. I tend to believe more in the projections than I do the early struggles, especially in a small sample size. I think if Minnesota can find the Pablo Lopez they were expecting and hoping for as their offense has started to click, and frankly, if they can keep Byron Buxton healthy, they're going to be in a very good place. They have those pieces. They went out and spent a few years ago on Carlos Correa. They've kept Carlos Correa around. They've built a team that they believe can be a perennial contender, certainly in this division, but also for a chance to win a World Series. They got that monkey off their back a season ago in the playoffs when they finally, after one of the most bizarre losing streaks in all of American sports, I believe they had lost 22 consecutive playoff games. Not playoff series, 22 consecutive playoff games. they finally got rid of that demon, exercised that demon, if you will, found themselves back into a deeper playoff run, and they believe that they can go that distance again this season. They're the expected team. They're the team that makes sense. It's the easy pick. But for me, when you see them start to get hot and rip off 11 wins, if you're going to win divisions, you got to have long win streaks. And I just don't know if Cleveland is capable of repeating the magic that they started their season with. I don't know if Kansas City is capable of having long win streaks like Minnesota's on right now. And the Tigers just flirt with one-run victories way too often to believe that what they've done early this year is sustainable at all. I find the story fascinating. Maybe you do too. 312-332-3776 is the phone number if you would like to weigh in on it. Also interesting nationally, some teams are already making trades. You don't see this very often, but only May. Usually teams wait for a clearer picture or a clearer market to develop before they start to make moves. But one that maybe almost qualifies as a blockbuster was made yesterday. I want to talk about that and what it could mean for your White Sox next. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino, White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
White Sox Weekly continuing on. Connor McKnight with the day off. Shane Orling sitting in with you as we get you set. The pregame show coming up in about an hour for White Sox and Cardinals. Eric Fetty on the hill for the Sox against former Sox Lance Lynn, pitching for the dreaded St. Louis Cardinals. Kind of an interesting story came through yesterday, and for me, it was a big surprise. I know there was a relief pitcher trade. I believe the Diamondbacks traded, or the Angels sent somebody to Atlanta for cash. You'll see some of that early in the year. But typically, in the month of April and certainly May, as we approach May, or as we're in May rather now, you don't see a ton of activity in the trade market in Major League Baseball. And there's a reason for that. Major League Baseball is a long season. It's 162 games. What you do in the first 30 is likely not what you will do in the final 130. Water will find its level. If you start the season incredibly well, the way Cleveland did, for example, it's not entirely likely that a 17-6 start means you're going to rip off 80% of your wins over 162 games. You're due to lose. And for that reason, teams typically wait until the later trade deadline at the end of July to start making moves. Once you have a clearer picture and there's only 50 games remaining in the season, you have an idea after you've played 110 games what those final 52 are going to look like. You have an idea of who you are. And it makes approaching a market and making decisions about players, whether to sell, whether to buy, it makes those decisions and those things clearer. That's not to say that all teams aren't aware of who they are today. Some teams are aware. When you look at the standings, it's difficult to lie to yourself. If you're the LA Angels and you're sitting at 12-20 and Mike Trout is out for 6 weeks after MCL surgery, you can probably pretty safely start to make some moves or start thinking about it. If you're Miami off to a horrific 9-25 start, you can probably pretty safely consider that you're going to be sellers. It's not easy to overcome being 16 games under 500. It's just not. That's an incredibly difficult thing, even though you have the time left to do it. And I bring up Miami because yesterday they grabbed a headline when they traded Luis Arias, former batting title winner, their second baseman, to the San Diego Padres in a five-player deal. Miami got back outfielders Dylan Head and Jacob Marcy, first baseman Nathan Martorella, and right-handed reliever Woosuk Go. So all of those guys are prospects. And I bring this up to say, the Sox have a few players who might be valuable. And clearly, teams are a little desperate if the Padres are willing to make this move early and give up a bevy of prospects and a relief pitcher for Arise, you can start to have questions. Now, look, this is relevant for both teams in Chicago. I know Northside fans are not super thrilled about the bullpen right now, nor should they be. And there's a dire need for a bullpen arm there. And maybe we've seen the Sox and Cubs work together before on trades. Maybe you can have an opportunity, if you're the White Sox, to go out and fleece somebody. Because another thing that I read this week was from Jim Bowden of The Athletic, who offered reasons for optimism and pessimism for all 30 MLB teams. And when he wrote up the White Sox, the reasons for pessimism, he painted a rather bleak picture, but one thing in particular stood out to me. Jim Bowden said their best player, Luis Robert Jr., is on the IL with a hip injury, not a surprise. Offensively, the White Sox are 30th in runs scored and OPS and 29th in home runs. On the pitching side, they are 29th in ERA, 28th in WHIP, and last in the American League in walks allowed. Oh, and they have a bottom third farm system. That's the part that stands out, because that's the part that I think in the short term you can fix. When you have a guy on the mound today in Eric Fetty who's having a wonderful start to the season, and again, that doesn't mean he's going to have some stellar long season where he's dominant, lights out every game, count on starter, Cy Young contender, all of those things. It's not necessarily going to be that, but he might be valuable to someone. You might have pieces, and a guy like Tommy Pham, who you signed off the scrap heap and nobody was interested, but guess what? He's yours now, and he's hitting the ball. And if he continues to hit the ball, and it's not an unreasonable expectation that he could, he's done it in his career. He was on Arizona. He hit the ball there. He hit the ball when he was in San Diego. He's a hitter, and he's hitting the ball now for the White Sox, and he could be valuable to somebody. And when you look at what the Marlins were able to get back for Arise trading early, and now some people are lower on this trade than others, but Dylan Head, the kid that they traded, is 19 years old, and he was a first-round pick a year ago. Got a ton of speed, good defensively, can steal bases. In fact, he's ranked in the top 30 prospects in Major League, in the class, excuse me, in that year, in that draft. Good bat speed, he's added some strength, but you're looking at kids. Again, like, this is a 19-year-old kid who was a first-round pick that the Marlins were just able to acquire because they had something the Padres deemed as valuable. I don't think the White Sox have to marry themselves to being in the bottom third in baseball in farm system rankings. I think there's been some shrewd work done in getting a guy like Tommy Pham, in getting a guy like Eric Fetty, and having returns on those things. Because if you can create value for somebody else, then maybe you can steal from them. And maybe you can improve that farm system. And this is why, referencing Jim Bowden again, I took issue with what he said about the reason for optimism. Because I think the reason for optimism is on the baseball field. Gavin Sheets started the season well, and he's slowed down a little bit lately, but in that sweep against the Rays, a 3-for-4 outing, he's hit 3 home runs this season, highest batting average of his career. You're seeing a guy at the age of 28 start to really put it together when he steps into the batter's box. You've got Eric Fetty on the mound today, who's been awesome. And we've all talked about how great he's been. There are bright spots on this team that I think can turn their bottom third farm system into at least the middle of the pack, if not higher. They've done this before. It didn't work the way everybody wanted, but the White Sox have in the past torn it down to acquire young talent, and just because it didn't have the result, the process was correct. And they have an opportunity to do that again, and that would be my reason for optimism, not what Jim Bowden had to write, which I will say is true. Everything he says here is true. The new offerings at the concession stands, including the Southside and Smokehouse Smash Burgers, Ogden Foods Bratwurst Barbecue Pulled Pork, and the Impossible Dog, and of course, the Campfire Milkshake. We all know that that's excellent. It is. The milkshake's awesome. The Smokehouse Smashburgers are awesome. We know that. I would like to talk about some of the optimism on the field. And I know that that can be difficult, and you got to squint to see it because the record is what it is, and the team looks like what they look like, and the offense last night shut out again. But there are things that are valuable that I think you can use this to fix the future. That's the important thing for me right now as a fan, is if I'm a Sox fan, I am not lamenting where we're at now. I'm looking at how we can get better going forward in the next few years. And I think there are opportunities because of what Chris Getz has been able to do, finding value where others didn't. The fact that nobody wanted Tommy Pham, nobody was interested. And you sign him, and he comes in here, and he hits the ball. And he's honest about why he's here, and he's honest about what he's trying to do and what his approach is, and he's just playing ball. The fact that no one wanted him and you were the team that got him now puts you in the advantageous spot. Because if Tommy Pham is still hitting 315 or 330 in a month and a half, you can bet teams will want him then. And they're going to have to pay a lot more than they would have if they'd signed him a couple weeks ago. But that was Chris Getz that did that. I'm telling you, look, I get why fans are pessimistic. I get why fans are negative on what's happened so far this season. But it's not all bad. And there are ways that you can use the value you've acquired to make the future better. Speaking of the future, White Sox prospects. There are some guys we got to talk about. And we will have Jim Callis join us at noon to do it. But I want to start this conversation next on White Sox Weekly. Also, learn from the pros this summer at a White Sox summer camp presented by Wintrust. Starting at $165, kids ages 5 to 12 can register for a 4-day baseball camp offered at over 35 locations throughout the Chicagoland area. To learn more, visit whitesox.com/play. Prospect talk next. White Sox Weekly, Shane Orling sitting in for Connor McKnight on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Now weekdays, noon to 3.
White Sox Weekly continuing on here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. You can enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Ultimate Game Day experience. May's winner will get 4 Diamond Box tickets to 1 home game, plus the chance to throw out the first pitch, tour the broadcast booth, hang out with Len and DJ, watch batting practice, and receive a custom White Sox jersey. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. That is awesome. That's a great, great prize. I remember as a kid growing up, I grew up in Detroit, and my dad bought this package. I don't know if he bought it or won it, whatever. And it included a inning spent in the broadcast booth with the radio team. And that's the reason, really, that I do what I do now, was going to the ballpark and hanging out in the booth and having that opportunity to chat between innings and see what the job was. And that was, for me, was like, whoa, you can make that a career? That's incredible. So that is an awesome opportunity. If you want to win the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes, enter at whitesox.com/sweepstakes. A 4-pack. Diamond Box tickets to 1 home game, chance to throw out the first pitch and tour the broadcast booth. That's an awesome sweepstakes for the baseball fan and you. I want to talk some about the prospects for the White Sox. And today, a little bit of news coming across from the White Sox in a press release that Danny Mendick was going on the 10-day injured list. So to replace Danny Mendick on the 26-man roster, they called up infielder Brian Ramos from Birmingham. And it's been a struggle for Ramos in Birmingham this season. I talked with Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, earlier, and he had some signs of positivity for Ramos. Now, Ramos, for the season, hitting 16 for 88, but in his last 33 at-bats, 11 for 33. sometimes that can be something that is tangibly changed. Maybe there was a change in the way he's approaching something with the coaching staff, a change in the swing pattern. That can happen. And Brian Ramos, the fourth-ranked prospect in the White Sox system at third base, just 22 years old, young from Cuba, called up today to be a part of this White Sox team while Danny Mendick is on the injured list. And sometimes these stays are short, and we hope that the moment's not too big for Brian. Occasionally, you see guys come up and make the most of their opportunity and eat. And that's the hope, is that Brian Ramos in those last 33 at-bats, that they're real, that they're legit, and that he can continue to hit the ball the way he has hit the ball in this small sample the last week or so. 11 for 33 is a good sign. And if you can find a steady bat at third base, that's a good thing for the White Sox. Getting that Major League Baseball experience for some of these young guys, getting that experience at the next level can be important. And if it's successful, then it can be great. The one thing I always worry about with prospects is occasionally you bring them up and they aren't playing well. I'm a guy, frankly, I don't like to have a long leash on that. I don't need guys up at the major league level getting a bunch of at-bats and building bad habits. I think you can destroy players' confidence that way. But the hope for Brian is that he's put it together and that the average on the climb, hitting 333 over the past week, that he can continue to bat that way and be a plus addition for the White Sox here as he replaces Danny Mendick. Obviously, concern about Colson Montgomery from the fan base, as the process hasn't been as quick as a lot of people would hope. 22 years old now, people thought he was kind of that player that could be on the Fernando Tatis Jr. style fast track and get right to the pros, get right up to the major league level. And that just hasn't happened. It's been a slower start for Colson this year at AAA Birmingham, but he is starting to flash the power. He's got the pedigree. He's the number one prospect in the system. And honestly, the way people have been a little concerned about the slow start for him, and if he's not on that fast track, could he be a little bit of a victim of the evolving landscape in Major League Baseball and the way that now you see less and less of the guy who has to wait in the minors, the prospect who has to wait until age 25, age 26 to finally get that call-up? Teams have kind of caught on to, hey, if we call up Bobby Witt sooner than later and then we pay him sooner than later, we actually get more value out of this rather than the old ways of waiting to start the clock, retaining the control, delaying the arbitration years. If a player is going to be good the way Tatis was, you just want to bring them up. I'm not by any means worried about Colson Montgomery. The profile as a prospect is all there. His approach at the plate, I think, can get better. And I think he's having opportunities to do that. But I think people forget how good the AAA level is. I think people forget kind of the challenges that face these guys when they're coming up in the minor league systems. And I'm okay with the White Sox being more patient. I know there's some fans out there who would prefer that, look, if the team is going to be bad, what are we using veteran players for? Why, guys like Danny Mendick, guys like Tommy Pham, when we can bring up some of the young guys. I get hesitant with that, truly. I get concerned with the quick call-up guys, because for every Fernando Tatis Jr. and Bobby Witt, there's a Spencer Torkelson, a former number one pick, number one overall. Got called up almost immediately to Detroit. About a year after being drafted, he was on the opening day roster. Hasn't really been sent down. Hasn't really done anything at the major league level. They've just put him out there as a piece. And it looks like a guy who has built a lot of bad habits and is having a very difficult time getting out of them. And we all want Colson to be a high-quality player. We all want him to be what we expected, an elite shortstop with power, some speed, high-level defense, The hope is that he can be. But if you bring him up too early, and frankly, it has happened in this organization in the past as well, if he comes up too quickly, you can burn his confidence if he's not ready. So I'm okay with the Sox taking the patient approach as far as Colson Montgomery goes. Hey, head to the ballpark next Saturday, May 11th, as the White Sox take on the Guardians at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a White Sox quarter zip presented by Xfinity. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Let's pause 10 seconds now for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
If you like prospect talk, you're about to get a whole lot more of it. Very excited to talk with Jim Callis, senior writer at MLB Pipeline. We will do that next on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
White Sox Weekly, White Sox pregame coming up about a half hour. The White Sox get set to take on the Cardinals today. Eric Fetty on the mound for the Sox. Lance Lynn gets the ball for the St. Louis Cardinals. And Sox fans, you can join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coke Zero Sugar. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy Kids Run the Bases postgame, caricature artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Shane Orling in for Connor McKnight today as we bring in senior writer at MLB Pipeline, Jim Callis. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing good, Shay. How are you doing?
We're doing good, man. We're a little curious about the news this morning. The White Sox had to put Danny Mendick on the IL, and obviously a corresponding move has to be made. So adding to the 26-man roster is their fourth-ranked prospect, Brian Ramos, infielder, third baseman. He's been in Double-A Birmingham and, frankly, has not hit well this season. Now, I know he's 11 of 33, I believe, in his last 33 at-bats, so he's gotten hot. But when you see a 180 batting average at the Double-A level and he's getting called up as an injury replacement, it's fair to question it.
Yeah, I mean, I did not realize when I saw the news, and I've been spending so much time working on the draft recently, I haven't kept up on how, like, every minor leaguer's doing. I just assumed he was off to a good start. And I saw the numbers, and I was like, well, I mean, look, this was clearly a need-based call-up. They wanted a third baseman. And I do think he is one of the best prospects in the system, the slow start aside. But yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw the numbers. I would have expected it would have been more like 282. But like you said, I mean, he's hitting better recently. I do think he was going to be up at some point this year. You know, I don't think he's up for good now, but I think we'll see him again later in the year. And I mean, frankly, I don't know that it really, it's not going to, and I'm not trying to be facetious here. Well, maybe I'm, it's not going to affect their chances of contending this year. Like at all, because I mean their season's already pretty much over. Which we knew coming in they weren't making the playoffs. So I don't really see any harm in it, other than if he was, you know, horribly overmatched in the big leagues, and I don't think he necessarily will be. That, you know, might damage his confidence or something. But yeah, I describe it as a curious move for sure, because the stats caught me off guard when I actually looked at him this morning.
You mentioned working on draft stuff. That certainly should be of interest to Sox fans with the fifth pick in the draft this year as that's coming up. What are you kind of looking at for the Sox? I was reading the other day, I think Chase Burns, the relief pitcher, or the right-handed pitcher, pardon me, was floated as a potential target. Where are you leaning with the White Sox going?
Yeah, I think they're going to get a college player. I mean, college hitters are the strength of the draft, and there's a couple really good college pitchers. I would suspect the kind of consensus top three guys would definitely be gone. That would be Georgia outfielder third baseman Charlie Condon, Oregon State second baseman Travis Bazana, Florida first baseman, left-handed pitcher, although he's going to be more of a first baseman as a pro, Jack Caglione. I think those guys will be gone. So I think their pool of players probably is looking at guys like, you know, in terms of hitters, Wake Forest first baseman Nick Kurtz and Texas A&M outfielder Braden Montgomery. And you know, on the pitching side, you know, Arkansas lefty Hagen Smith. I actually think Hagen Smith is a little bit better than Wake Forest. You mentioned Chase Burns. Those guys are clearly the top two pitchers in the draft. My guess is, I mean, we still have couple months to figure it out, but it's probably one of those four guys. And, you know, with the way – and I'll admit, look, I like the Andrew Vaughn pick. They took Andrew Vaughn where he should have gone in that draft. I can't see them taking another, you know, college first baseman where you're locked into, like, one position. I don't know if I see him taking Nick Kurtz after, you know, Andrew Vaughn has not worked out well. I could definitely see them taking one of the pitchers or Braden Montgomery from A&M.
It's kind of funny you brought up the college first baseman. What is it with that? Because you're right. Andrew Vaughn was taken in the right spot. He was third overall. It was the right pick in the right place. Just hasn't worked out. Our previous segment, I was talking about the Tigers took Spencer Torkelson 1-1 with the intention of playing him at first base. That hasn't worked out. What is it with this?
Yeah, it's crazy because you don't see a lot of first basemen go super high in the draft. But with Torkelson, even, you know, setting aside it was the COVID year, I mean, he probably would have broken Barry Bonds' home run record at Arizona State if it hadn't been a COVID year. But he had a great career at Arizona State, and that year guys were talking about Spencer Torkelson as literally being the best college offensive prospect probably in 20 years. Like, you might have had to go back to Mark Teixeira.
Yeah, he broke Barry Bonds' home run record at Arizona
State. Yeah, like, he was going after the career record, yeah, and he broke, the freshman home run record or single season. But yeah, and so, like, I mean, I've done this long enough that guys can't miss. And, like, if you told me, okay, Spencer Torkelson doesn't wind up being a superstar, I still would have put his floor, like, this guy's going to hit 270 with 25 homers on the low end. And, you know, right now he's hitting 12 with zero homers for the Tigers. And the same thing with Andrew Vaughn. Torkelson was considered ahead of Vaughn, but it wasn't, like, you know, drastically different. I mean, Andrew Vaughn, you don't often see, you know, first baseman, you know, there was some thought, oh, maybe he can play third, maybe he can play outfield. But we pretty much knew that Andrew Vaughn was a first baseman. You don't usually see those guys go that high in the draft, but, like, everybody thought the bat was really, really good too. And, you know, again, like, you know that these guys aren't necessarily all going to be superstars, but just his combination of hitting ability and power and patience. Again, I would have thought, like, okay, you're at least getting, you know, like a 260 hitter who's going to hit 25 homers a year and draw a bunch of walks. And I guess he kind of did that last year without the walks, but I mean, he's 26 years old. I mean, right now, I don't think he has a homer this year either, right? I think he's hitting under 200. I don't know. And so, again, I wouldn't – it's weird. On one hand, I don't think you can just say, oh, you know, you can't – you know, work out. But I just think the Andrew Vaughn experience is still so fresh. I just would be surprised on a team that needs a lot of things that you would take a more one-dimensional player who's a first base only as opposed to, like, a Braden Montgomery – who's, you know, right fielder, and he's got well above average arm strength. I mean, they're not going to use him as a two-way guy, but he's pitched. Or you take a guy like a Hagen Smith or Chase Burns, who you could say, hey, that guy might be the ace of our pitching staff. And you don't draft for fan reaction, but I can't imagine what the fan reaction would be if they took a first baseman with the number 5 overall pick, especially considering, I mean, you probably know this, Shay, and I don't know how many fans realize this, but with the way the draft lottery works, yep, because the White Sox are considered to have, you know, quote unquote, won a lottery pick, even though they moved down from 4th to 5th when, yep, the lottery played out, they can't pick higher than 10th next year. So, I mean, they could lose, you know, they could lose 120 games this year, and they still aren't going to pick higher than 10th. So I had somebody, we do a listener mailbag question, a reader mailbag column at MLB.com, and I had somebody a couple weeks ago ask me, like who's pick, you know, who's got more pressure, and which team has the most pressure on them with their first round pick this year? And I was like, it's unquestionably the White Sox, just because where they are, and they know that no matter what happens, they aren't picking higher. You know, it's not like most years where, okay, you know, if before the lottery system, right now they'd be the clear favorite to have the number one pick, and even with the lottery system, if you didn't have that rule, they'd have as good of odds as anybody's having the number one pick. But it doesn't matter how bad they are; they can't pick higher than 10th.
How much does that change what the process should be, though? Like, you mentioned you don't want to take a more one-dimensional guy like a first baseman, but there's this Connor Griffin kid as well. He's a high, yep, school bat, I believe. Plays some shortstop, plays some outfield. Could you go that route instead? Like, is the process a little better? I wonder if you're taking a guy now in the two-way player era who only pitches or who only plays first base, Maybe is it more valuable to get a guy like this Connor Griffin?
Yeah, you could. I mean, I think you could definitely argue that Connor Griffin, well, I was going to say he might have the highest ceiling in the draft, and he probably has the best all-around tools in the draft. But the question that comes with him is on the bat, which is obviously the most important tool, because if you don't hit, you don't play. And it's not so much that it's gigantic swing and miss and you're worried he's not going to hit. It's more, is he an average hitter? Is he better than that? He had a shoulder injury last summer that wasn't serious but affected his swing, and he wasn't great in the showcase circuit. And he's playing, you know, this spring he's playing Mississippi high school competition, so it's not like you're seeing a bunch of guys who are going to be playing pro ball that you can really – I mean, he's crushing it like he should. But, yeah, you could. And, you know, Mike Shirley, the scouting director, and the White Sox have shown they're not afraid. You know, some teams are reluctant to take high school players high in the draft. The White Sox aren't. I mean, their two best prospects in the system are both high school first-rounders and Colson Montgomery and Noah Schultz. So, yeah, you could. And, you know, I think – I mean, look, we can see it from the outside. The White Sox can see it from the inside. This isn't going to be a quick fix where you're going to make, you know, like, hey, you hit on this year's pick. Like, you take the right college guy, and you know, you're going to be back in contention in 2 years. So, yeah, you could. I think it just comes down to, you know, like you have more certainty if you're looking at, say, college outfielders with Braden Montgomery's bat than you do with Connor Griffin's bat. Now, the crazy thing is Connor Griffin has also played short so well this spring that I've had guys tell me that they think he can play shortstop. Like, they would send him out as a shortstop. He's also, I mean, again, they're not going to two-way him, but he's up to, like, 95, 96 on the mound. And I've had guys say you could almost make him a late first-round pick as a pitcher. I mean, his tools, the bat might only be average, which if it's average, it's still fine because you're talking – everything else is well above average, from raw power to speed to arm to defense. So, yeah, you could definitely go that route. It's just it's like I said, it's a tough situation for them because you really kind of have to hit on this pick because you're not getting a premium pick next year.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it in terms of the kind of pressure cooker that it makes the fifth pick into this year because of what happens next season. Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, always has a ton of great information on the prospects and the draft. Thank you for joining us. Great stuff, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Great talking to you, Shay. Take care.
You as well. We'll talk to Jesse Rogers on the other side. I want to pick his brain about this Luis Arraez trade and if it's something that's going to be happening a little more frequently as we move forward here through the MLB season. We'll talk to Jesse next on White Sox Weekly, the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Greeny 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly as we get you set for the pregame show coming up in a little bit here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Cardinals and White Sox squaring off today in St. Louis. And be here on Friday, June 28th, to see country music artist Jordan Davis perform a postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola. After the White Sox take on the Rockies at 6:10, don't miss your chance for an up-close on-field experience. Exclusive on-field dirt passes are on sale now with limited availability. To buy field passes, visit whitesox.com/concert. Jesse Rogers joining us now on the hotline. Jesse, hey there, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, Shay. What's up, pal? Let's talk some ball. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. So I've asked a few people about this. We have Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, on a little earlier. Just talked with Jim Callis. The White Sox replaced Danny Mendick on the 10-day IL with Brian Ramos, fourth-ranked prospect in their system. And I had the same thought Jim Callis told me he had when I saw the news this morning. Oh, Brian Ramos is getting called up. Must be having a good start at AA. And then you look at the numbers, and he's hitting 180. And so do you have any insight on what the process is? Is this just what it is? He's going to be here as a body on the 26-man roster while Mendick's out and then probably go back down? Or do they really believe – I know he's been hot lately. I think 333 in his last 33 at-bats. Do they believe he's found something?
So here's the answer to the question. If the White Sox were in a contending situation, it'd be a whole different scenario. But when you come up in the situation that you're in, this is your chance to grow and have a little runway to at least taste major league pitching and the experience itself. If you have to go back down, that's okay. But this is the time to learn and to go through some struggles. So they must deem, because he's been hot lately, that he's handling himself okay, that he won't look completely lost at the plate or whatever. Now, nobody knows for sure. You don't have a crystal ball. But the real key is the Sox record and where they are in the standings and the ability to give young players a bit of a runway. In fact, I'm surprised they haven't called up some other guys, like Drew Thorpe is ready for the major leagues, the guy they got in the Dylan Cease trade. So I'm expecting him to be back up or to come up soon. I'm a little surprised. You know, double-A jump is always a little surprising. But when you have this kind of a chance, you take advantage of it. Let's see. If he looks completely overmatched, well, there's one or two levels back down he can go, triple-A or double-A. But if he starts to feel comfortable, that's great. He'll go through some growing pains later on. The longer he's up here, the more he learns. So it's really about the chance to give him runway to succeed or fail, and there's always the minor leagues to go back down. It is so much easier for young players to break in a non-contending situation. As much as you want them to play winning baseball, they can relax and just take their time and grow on their own. So that's the one thing about the White Sox record right now. They can give the time and the opportunity to some of these young guys like Ramos.
I think there's two sides to it, though, Jess. Like, I was talking about it earlier with regards to a guy like Colson Montgomery, who I think a lot of people would have expected to be here by now, especially it feels like baseball's changing a bit. There's a lot more fast-tracked prospects than there used to be, and I kind of felt like Colson was that guy. Now he's got six hits in his last five games in Charlotte. He's starting to flash some power and hit a few home runs. Do you expect to see Colson Montgomery up here sooner than later?
I do. I haven't asked around about his development beyond the numbers, like what's happening under the surface. That's so important when it comes to development, because minor league numbers can be skewed for a lot of different reasons. So look, there must be a reason Ramos is up here, and I'm sure Pedro Grifol and Chris Getz are going to be addressing that in the coming days. And there's a reason why Montgomery isn't. I don't think it's money related with Montgomery or anything like that, you know, because there's always those manipulations that can go on with teams. But I do expect it. Let's just put it that way. I do expect it. I mean, it is early in general to be calling up guys, but when you are 20 under 500, it can happen. So over the normal course of a season, whether you're in the race or not, usually call-ups start to happen in June, July. And I mean call-ups where it's deserved. You've done enough in the minors. It's not just a need. Like right now with Mendek on the IL, there's a little bit of a need here. I'm not sure that Ramos deserved the call-up. Like if you're banging on the door like Drew Thorpe, that's a different story. So I don't think Montgomery is banging on the door just yet, but it could be very soon. And like I said, over the normal course of a season, you see call-ups after a couple months. You know, he's done enough in the minors. Let's give him a call-up. So remember, Ramos is here because of a need that opened up, not because they think he's ready for to take over an infield position for the long term.
You mentioned it's early in the season to be calling guys up. It's also early in the season to be making trades. And yet, last night the Marlins shipped out Luis Arraez and brought in some prospects from the Padres. I saw it. I was surprised. I didn't think that the Marlins would do it this early, but I guess if you can strike while the iron's hot. I know the returns on this are mixed. I've seen some people totally pan it for the Marlins. I've seen others say they did okay. Your thoughts on that, and then could this kind of be a preview of what the White Sox might be doing? Is there a chance that they could make a trade earlier than expected?
I think it's a great point. I don't see why this can't be just a stand. Like, why not open the floodgates a little bit? Why do we have to wait for July? I know there's a whole bunch of teams that will wait to see if they're in it, but there's also a lot of teams that are willing to deal. The Diamondbacks traded with the Twins the other day, for God's sakes. Both teams have high aspirations. We saw this deal yesterday. I absolutely think that Chris Getz would be open for business. He said this in the offseason before he traded Dylan Cease, that if a trade comes along in April or May, I'll do it. So, yeah, I do think something like yesterday reminds people that it doesn't just have to be late July. It can be at any time. And when you're out of the race like the Marlins or conceivably the White Sox, there's no reason not to. You certainly get more back now because Luis Arraez now is going to be with San Diego for 4.5 months instead of 2 months, which is what, you know, happens at the deadline. So, of course, Miami got back more now. So why wouldn't Chris Getz think about that? And I don't know if it's Michael Kopech or Chris Flexen or even Eric Fetty. Who knows? But I think it'd be silly for teams out of the race not to be open for business from day one. I commend Miami if they like the return they got, which they must like because they pulled the trigger on the deal.
Could it be Tommy Pham getting moved too? I mean, you think about a guy who feels like a couple weeks ago nobody in baseball wanted him. And Chris Getz was the one that was like, well, let's sign him. And now he's here and he's hitting. And I just think if it goes another 2-3 weeks and he's still hitting 330, I don't know if it'll be that good. But if he is, teams are going to start to want him.
Yeah, I think so. When we get into that range of, okay, my guys have had enough at bats, and all of a sudden my DH stinks, I'm ready to make a move. Like, you have to understand, even a month isn't enough, especially with a veteran. Like, you got to give a guy almost 2 months in some ways. Now, if you're really desperate, it's one thing. Like, you know, you're just getting no production out of the DH or outfield, and you got to make the move. But usually teams aren't panicking in early May. But yes, put Pham on that list, and why not a June trade instead of July for a team that needs him? I'm not saying we're going to see a dozen trades early on just because Arraez went yesterday, but I do think we'll see some more. We're in an era of haves and have-nots, and we're also in an era with the third wild card that you might be one guy away from an 84th win on the season, and that gets you over the top. The have-nots are pretty clear already, right? Miami, the White Sox, maybe a couple other teams, although Oakland seems to be in it this year, apparently.
The Angels are probably a have-not.
Yeah,
the Rockies.
There you go. The Angels, and I should mention the Rockies above all else. So there you go. So we're in this era where the have-nots are really bad. There's no reason to wait. So I do think you could see more deals, and Pham would be at the top of the list. I just don't know if it's going to happen that soon.
What teams would be desperate enough to make a move right now? Like, honestly, Jess, I know where you spend a lot of your time. And I know that the Sox and Cubs are not strangers to doing deals with each other. What's the desperation level on the north side with the way the bullpen's been?
Yeah, I don't think he's quite there yet. I mean, if Kopech was more of a proven product, different story. But I don't think he's rolling the dice early in the season and giving up a lot, because I'm sure Getz would ask for a lot, for Michael Kopech. If this is Michael Kopech 3 years from now as a solid closer, different story. So I don't think there's necessarily a match this early in the year. I'm not sure the Cubs are that desperate. They're winning games. They're getting guys back from injury. Let's see how it plays out a little bit longer. But I'll tell you, like, you know, it's about injuries more than, you know, production, to be honest. Houston Astros have all sorts of pitchers that are hurt.
Yeah.
Now, they're starting to get them back. But let's say they re-injure themselves or continues that trend. Then you say, oh, well, maybe Chris Flexen or maybe Eric Fetty or maybe Mike Soroka, you know, something like that. So I think it's the teams that are experiencing injuries that will be more desperate, because it's a real deviation from their plan. Like, oh, my God, I have two openings in my starting staff in early May. So I think that is more of a possibility. So look at teams that are banged up, and there's a bunch of them. Milwaukee Brewers are banged up. The Cubs a little bit, but they're getting healthy. The Astros on the mound, but they're starting to get healthy. So it's about projecting who's going to be, you know, who's getting their guys back and who's going to have some long-term injuries. You call those teams, you try to make a deal.
I want to ask about this AL Central, too. I was talking about it earlier. Like, if you were in a coma for the month of April and you're a baseball fan, you would wake up today and be like, well, the AL Central must be horrible. How about four of the teams are over 500 by multiple games and they all have positive run differentials? Are any of these teams fake, or is this division actually good?
And if I'm not mistaken, Kansas City has the best run differential in baseball. Is that possible?
Yep.
I think that's right.
Turns out paying Bobby Witt was a good idea.
I picked the Royals to win the division. This is documented on ESPN.com. So I do think they are for real. Now, I also picked them because I wasn't sure who else to pick in that division. It's so upside down every year. Cleveland seems for real. I don't think Minnesota has lasting power. Now, I'm saying this on a day where they've won 11 in a row, so I could look like a fool. I don't think Minnesota is going to be there in the end. I do think Kansas City's for real. Detroit will battle. They'll be better than they've been in the past. But if you ask me today, I think it's between Cleveland and Kansas City for the division.
Yeah, Detroit's just, like, they just don't score runs.
They're too young, and they're too young. It's going to catch up with them later. They're going to be better, but they're too young to win or make the playoffs this season.
One last thing, and then I'll let you go. The story that really came out of baseball earlier this week and frankly sucked, Mike Trout getting surgery, and it feels like every year this guy is battling something, whether it's something in his back, Now he's got the MCL, and he needs something, and he has to miss time. And this was a guy, it felt like, was a guaranteed 100 WAR player, first ballot Hall of Famer, would go down as one of the all-time greats. What is his legacy going to end up being now when it seems like the twilight of his career is going to be spent on the IL?
I think you just said it. We're going to remember him as a guy that in the twilight of his career, he was on the IL. But the measure for the Hall of Fame, and I don't think you're asking if he's going to make it.
No,
but
I'm sure he's going to make it.
Yeah,
I have doubts he'll be first ballot anymore.
No, maybe so. But my point being is, was he the best player of an era? And maybe that era is shorter than it could have been. The answer is yes. So if it was 7 years, 10 years, whatever the number is, the answer was yes. It's almost like Gale Sayers, right? He was great, but the era that he was great was just shorter because of injury. So that's it. We're going to remember him as great for his era, but the twilight was cut down by injuries. I think you said it exactly right.
Jesse, thank you as always for coming on.
You got it. Enjoy the game today. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, buddy. That was Jesse Rogers. We will get you set pregame coming up in about 10 minutes right here on ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
Continuing on, White Sox Weekly, Connor McKnight with the day off. We'll get you set. The pregame show, White Sox and Cardinals, it's coming up in a little less than 8 minutes. Looking forward to that. Eric Fetty on the mound for the White Sox. It'll be Lance Lynn looking for revenge. Hopefully the White Sox can tag him up a little bit. I mentioned earlier in the show, Lance Lynn this season, you look at the raw numbers, the ERA looks good. The numbers look good. But Major League Baseball has done a great job with StatCast and their Baseball Savant page of getting the more analytical, advanced information available to their fans. And when you look at that for Lance, I'm going to say regression is coming for Lance Lynn. It's a lot of fastball. And it's a lot of hard contact, and it's a lot of barrels. And the results have been favorable so far. But as the weather gets a little warmer and the ball flies a little better, you have to expect a guy that throws that many fastballs and gets hit hard that often, the results are going to stop going his way. So maybe if you're a Sox fan, you can hope that's today. You can spoil Lance Lynn's revenge outing against the White Sox after the trade a year ago, now back in St. Louis. He's on the mound today for the Cardinals. The news this morning from the White Sox, Danny Mendick is on the 10-day injured list. Taking his spot on the 26-man roster is Brian Ramos, their fourth-ranked prospect. He's 22 years old, hitting just .182, 16 of 88 at AA Birmingham. But in his last eight games, 11 of 33. So something has turned around with Brian Ramos, hitting .333 over the last week plus. Five doubles, two home runs, seven RBIs, and seven runs scored. Again, Ramos entered the season rated by MLB.com as the number four prospect and by Baseball America as the number four prospect in the White Sox system. So he's got the pedigree. And we will see as this plays forward if Brian Ramos can find a little success. And as Jesse Rogers talked to us about last segment, this is an opportunity on a team that is not a contending team, that is off to a rough start, to call up a young player, to call up a prospect, and give that player some opportunity to learn on the fly and develop at the major league level and have a chance to have a little success at the pro level. And that can be huge for a young player like Ramos. Again, 22 years old, with all the pedigree as a top-level prospect. Now with an opportunity, thanks to Danny Mendick's injury, to be on this team and get some at-bats. The pregame show is coming up next, getting you set. White Sox and Cardinals. First pitch a little after 1 o'clock. We'll get you the pregame show next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.